Welcome to another episode of True Stories from Tinseltown. And as my guest, who I love and adore, and I love his blog, says, what do we know? How do we know these are real true stories of Tinseltown? Well, let's just say we hope they're true stories of Tinseltown. Allegedly, they're true stories of Tinseltown, but it's Tinseltown. So I want to introduce my guest right away. I love him. You'll love his blog. I laughed until I cried and sat there for hours reading it, and I was forever hooked on this man. So welcome, Poseidon from Poseidon's Underworld. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you. And thank you very much for having me.
I want you on. I want you to come on
regularly. Wonderful show.
Did you listen to any of them?
I did. I listened to the David Selby.
Oh, I am so in love with him.
That was really neat. I didn't realize he still worked, because I guess I don't go to enough contemporary things to know. But that's great.
I've done three with him, and I told him I'm his biographer, but he's in Scotland, and then he's going back to England, and then we're going to do one more for the fans. I love him. I told him he's my husband in my next life, called it.
I don't know if you happened to notice, I think you would have, since you're such a fan of his, but I did a post not too long ago about, I always do a series of celebrity men in the bathtub.
Oh,
and he was in it. He had two photos.
Raoul. Well, I was looking.
And it was from a very obscure movie of his. I can't even remember the title.
Was it one with Barbara Streisand?
No, it was very obscure. He was the lead, you know. He was young, in his probably 20s or something.
Was Maude Adams in that with him?
I don't know. I should have looked before I talked to you about
it. He's a darling. I love him. He is just a sweetie pie, and he has been such a wonderful guest. And
yes,
I've gotten some really fun guests, and you should listen to the Rick Lenz one, who I got through his ex-wife, Jessica Raines, who is Claude Raines' daughter, and she is fabulous.
Oh, okay. Wasn't he married to Kay Lenz at one point?
Was our David Cassidy.
Oh.
That was his first wife.
Was Rick Lenz related to Kay Lenz? No. Like, was she a sister?
No. He was in Cactus Flower. And
so much for the true stories of Hollywood, true stories of Tinseltown. That's one thing I really try hard not to propagate, things that aren't, you know, real, that I can kind of validate. I don't treat my blog like a research project or anything.
Yeah.
But I definitely look to make sure I'm, you know, getting as close as I can to what really happened. We never really know, because
because people will, you know, they're never really going to tell you.
But stars don't like to tell the truth. Press agents never tell the truth.
No. So. And, you know, if you get some good juicy stuff out of them, it's great. But, you know, it's not really, and I'm the same way, because I'm not here to just make up stuff about people. And when I talk to the people, I love to talk to them about everything. And, I'm with you, because, I'm not here to slander people, except for maybe one or two. I'm kidding.
But I think what's good about these latter day interviews that you're doing is that there's no reason for these people to hold back how they feel. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, you know, feel the wrath of Hedda Hopper and Sheila Graham and whoever else.
They're wonderful. You know, or
they
Rona.
They can tell how it was.
Yeah. You know, and they're very charming. And
most of the people probably aren't around anymore anyways.
Yeah.
You know, that they worked with. The older stars probably aren't, so.
No, a lot of them aren't. And it just, I'm loving this, John. I'm loving this Poseidon. This is really something mm-hmm. I'm loving and I'm getting it together. Did you see any of my other ones with that I'm doing with my other co-host, Donnie?
I haven't because Grace. That's a Facebook thing, right?
No.
And I don't.
No.
Oh.
No. I'll send it to
Facebook,
you.
No. You have a Facebook page, though,
yes.
correct?
Yeah, but I don't even want to be on Facebook anymore because of all the shenanigans and stuff, but it's actually got us listeners and also got me listeners on this. But I'll send you the link because I want okay. you on that, too, to talk more TV stuff because Donnie loves that stuff. So we'll talk about that later. So let's start scooping here. What were we talking about? Did we talk about?
Well, here's one thing I forgot that I wanted to mention.
What?
We have, I don't know if they have these anywhere else, but here in the armpit of the United States where I live, there's a thing called Half Price Books, a chain called Half Price Books. Mm. And people take their books in there and they give you like 25 cents for your books and they turn around and sell them for $15.
Oh, no.
And it's yeah. not quite that bad, but it's not, you
yeah.
know.
It's not like
all that beneficial yeah. to the donator.
Yeah.
But every year they have a huge clearance sale in a warehouse and everything in the entire warehouse is $2. And I went in and I think I got 20 books over two visits.
Cool.
So spent $40, but there were some really interesting things.
Deal.
And one of the books I got, which I probably it's falling apart because here's the thing, I read voraciously.
I
and
do
I read
too.
At lunch outside in the sun. And they fall apart. The glue starts to come apart. But anyway, this book I found called Dishing Hollywood. And I think you'd really like it, you know, especially considering the theme of your latest podcast. But it's a book about celebrities that endured various scandals here and there. And then at the end of each story is a recipe.
I have it.
Oh, you have it.
He bought it full price.
Well, what I was going to get at was there was I feel like I know a lot simply because since I was 18 years old, I've never been without a book in my hand or watching something, you know. It's like a obsession with me, but I had never heard of the cowboy star Slade Cooley, I think his name was, that's in that book.
I haven't and read it in years, but I have it in my bookcase.
He was this highly popular 1930s and 40s cowboy singing movie person and stage and stuff like concerts. And he just savagely murdered his wife.
Ooh.
And it was this huge scandal in 1960 and 1961. And he went to prison. And it was this huge thing, but no one ever have you ever heard of it, really? You know,
no
one ever talks about it.
I'll have to, what was the recipe? A Bloody Mary? No, really? Because I had some really, really weird recipes after the certain scandals.
Oh, I know. Well, then like, you know, for Lupe Velez, the woman who, the Mexican Spitfire who killed herself, they had like enchiladas, I think, or something after her. Some kind of Mexican dish, you know.
Did they have Carol Landis? Because I did a thing on her.
They did. Yeah. But that's another thing, too, though. Hollywood constantly on the lookout for story material. They remake everything,
yes.
right? But then you've got people like Lupe Velez, Carol Landis, the Slade Cooley, other people whose lives were far more interesting than most fiction.
Yes.
And no one ever does a movie about
it. I'm mad about this. Do you know Barbara Payton?
Yeah.
So
it's another one.
Yeah. I did a show with the author who's now my friend, John, and what a book, what a life.
And
actually
her husband was such a mess too.
Oh, well,
Tom
Neal. Yeah. But there was also the big triangle, Franch Othone, Tom Neal, and her, and what a mess her life was. What a book. And actually, someone bought it again. They optioned it off.
Optioned it.
And someone from The Sopranos is writing it, and hopefully it'll be made into major motion picture. I have another one. Do you know who Joy Lansing is? I figured you might.
I have heard of her, and I'm pretty sure I'd recognize her. She's blonde, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I know her.
So my friend Alex Hunter wrote a book about Joy Lansing, A Body to Die For, a love story. And she was 20 when she met Joy doing like this biker Bigfoot movie. And they had a love affair until Joy died, but they had to be in the closet because that would be a great story. Cause she's like a 50s chick trying to get into the groovy 60s, 70s swing, Joy. And, you know, she dated people like Sinatra and, you know, Joey Bishop and people like that. And then she meets, you know, Alex, and she has to portray Alex. Alex is now Rachel Hunter, her baby sister. It's a great book, and it'd be a great movie. Really great.
Well,
movie.
You know, they just recently did that Gloria Graham movie with Annette Bening, and that's, I mean, her life was another one that was really juicy.
I love it.
But I didn't see the movie, so I don't know if they even discuss any of her past, you know,
they do a little bit. Do they? Oh my God. But I do want to do an episode on Gloria Graham because she, wow, what a life. And I did see the movie recently. Annette Bening was okay, but you know what? She's Annette Bening. You know, I didn't buy her as Gloria Graham. She had her Annette Bening pretty much hairdo, her Annette Bening makeup.
That woman almost never changes her look from film to film. Yeah, it's really remarkable.
And she changed
Gloria,
her voice.
You know, had messed up her look so much constant surgeries to her mouth. She didn't like her mouth, and she kept messing with it. And finally, it was immobile. The upper lip was practically immobile.
I remember seeing that. And also, did you read how she put, like, cotton and stuff behind it?
To give her lips plump. I guess she was a little born a little too soon for what they do now.
She couldn't have
so she just crammed cotton up in there.
Poor, but she was fabulous, and all the scandal and all the scoop. But I enjoyed the movie. I did. But, you know, it's like watching Liberace, which strangely entranced me. That with Michael Douglas and with Matt Damon. I don't know
why. You liked that.
I hated
it. I thought it was really good. Oh, you didn't like it?
No, I hated Michael Douglas's performance, but I liked, I was like fascinated. I've seen it about 15 times. So
I did not know, but you know, Michael Douglas knew Liberace when he was a boy. I guess his father, for some reason, Kirk Douglas, was around Liberace at some point. And I don't know if they were neighbors or what it was.
Uh-huh.
And so he really had firsthand knowledge of how to present that. I thought he did a pretty good job.
He did, but I saw him be Michael Douglas a lot. But I got to give him major props for taking that role, for being, you know, showing himself pot belly, wig, the whole nine. I thought Matt Damon did a great job.
I did too.
Didn't you? Because he's playing this dumb young kid. And he's like, what, Matt was 50, 48, 49 when this was playing. So they made him look great. And, after the Liberace surgery, yikes, that he made him have.
Oh, I know. I remember all that, you know, live when it happened, of course. It was on all the talk shows and everything. But Scott Thorson kind of made the rounds, you know, of all the talk shows to kind of plead his case. But you know, two things about that movie kind of disappointed me. One was they so underutilized Debbie Reynolds. You know,
I didn't know it was her.
Really let her do anything.
She was
and
great.
Then at the very, very end, it seemed like they computer generated the dying Liberace. Like he was purple and gray and sort of shrunken. Like it looked like they did something digitally to make, because it didn't even look like him anymore.
Well,
it didn't look like Michael Douglas anymore. And I thought that was going a little bit far. You know, back in the 30s, Betty Davis had to fight to get all the right bandages and bruises on her face.
Oh, for marked women?
Now we digitally shrink someone's skull and make them a different color. It just seemed a little more than I was, you know.
Yeah, I guess the scene where Scott goes to say he wants Scott to see him, make sure he's okay, that he didn't get AIDS and that he said he was his favorite and all that other stuff. Who knows if that's true, but I'm compelled and I love it. You know, when he goes, oh, you were hot when they have the picture of Liberace playing the piano and Scott's, they're both getting fat. They're eating popcorn and they're talking about Judy. Oh no, I look like my mother. I look like my father. I look like Judy Garland in the fat period. Sid Love fat period. It was hysterical. If you
what
guys,
about Rob Lowe
was good. He looked he was a fiend. And I believe that that's true. I mean, he got hooked on the drugs because he had to lose that weight. And if you're put on those drugs, like anybody, like they used to do in MGM and all that other stuff, that, you know, you get addicted to it. And then Liberace gets all irked because he's high on all that stuff. And you know who I loved? Billy the piano player. Oh, I loved him. He didn't even say a word. You know, the first one?
The guy
he kicks out.
Dark hair.
He was great. And he mimics him and he rolls his eyes. Don't you dare get ketchup on that costume. You know what they got on dueling. And then Scott comes in and I loved his I don't know if she was his foster mother. Mr. Liberace. But it was
kind of a shame though. You know, they really wanted that to be a movie, you know, a movie.
Well, and who directed it? Great director.
They couldn't get anybody to give him that chance. So it went, you know, to cable, which meant, I don't know that Michael and Matt would have gotten Oscars or Oscar nominations. I don't know, but they ended up getting all kinds of other awards, you know, from television.
Yeah.
But they just couldn't get that story that for whatever reason, even now, you know, they couldn't get that out there.
Which is really odd and which is really weird because now I see they're doing a movie. I don't know who is producing this. I know Zachary Quinto's going to be in it. I guess he's playing Tony Perkins and Tab Hunter. It's the other. You know they're doing that movie? Yes, they're going to do a movie about the love story between Tab Hunter and Anthony Perkins.
Is Tab involved in it?
Tab is involved in it, yes.
He had, you know, that really wonderful documentary.
I loved it, loved it. And that's when I contacted
Confidential,
Rona.
Tab Hunter.
Yes.
Tab Hunter Confidential, yeah.
And that's
that was good.
Yeah, I loved it. And he looked amazing. And he was still riding his horses and everything. I thought he was great. And Rona looked amazing.
Oh, he's still riding his husband, too.
They've been together forever. Giddy up. So he looked really great.
I get so disappointed with Tab Hunter when I tune into his old TV appearances. Like he was on the $6 Million Man and he's barely in it. You know, like no one ever gave him his due, you know? So when he would be in a show of some kind later, it was always some small, you know, kind of thing. And it's so disappointing when you really
polyester.
You see his name and you're like, Tab.
Polyester.
Well, yeah, but that was a good big part for
I
him,
thought
but
he I'm was like, fabulous in that and he had such a great
when he would
sense
get used
humor.
In mainstream television shows and stuff they didn't do a thing
I know, don't really just remember him in those but you know I it was coming out I, wasn't that in the thing that they were going to out him but they did they said he was at an all-boy giggling pajama party yeah you know So
I mean, how much trouble can you get in when you got your pajamas on? Wouldn't it be
yes, you're not
the
doing an
be a little
orgy.
Bit more dangerous
yes.
without the pajamas?
I would think so. But I think that's going to be a good movie. And I know, Eddie Muller, Tab Hunter chose Eddie Muller to help him write his book from TCM.
Oh yeah,
I found that
film out. Noir.
Oh, yes, I interviewed him. He's a doll. I really loved him. He was a good guy. But that was something I had never heard. And he said unlike a lot of people, he said he gave me credit where a lot of people don't want to give the ghostwriters credit. But I didn't read the book, but the documentary Peeps was fab. Okay, you know what, Poseidon? I want you to tell these people why you chose the name of your blog to be Poseidon's Underworld. I know the story, but they don't.
It's multifaceted. I was, 5 years old when the Poseidon Adventure came out, so I didn't even see it in the theaters.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it. But when I was 7, my mother dragged me to the Towering Inferno, and I was kicking and screaming. I made a scene in the lobby I did not want to go. And we got in there, and I absolutely loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it with every drop of my blood in my body. I still watch it a couple times a year. But after that, I knew, you know, we went to see Airport 75, and before long I had a thing for disaster movies. So when the Poseidon Adventure aired, and I think it was in 75, if I'm not mistaken, I was sitting there watching it, and it just completely, you know, did me in. I mean, I was 7 years old, buying into every detail of it. We had been burglarized not long before that, so we were watching it on a black and white TV, which gave it a much grimier, you know, scarier,
grittier
element, you know,
kind of color. Element, yeah.
Absolutely. The people were dark and filthy, you know, before it even turned over.
Where everybody became dark and filthy.
Yeah. So anyway, the movie just resonated, and I used to get up, you know, it would be on like WTBS at 2:05 a.m. and I would set my alarm. You know, this is way back in the day before anybody had, you know, VCRs really or anything. And I just had to see it every time it was on television. There's no such thing as rental. You know, there was no such thing.
I know.
You scoured the TV guide for your favorite movie, and I watched it over and over and over. And so anyway, then the 90s came, and it became really fashionable to trash disaster movies because they kind of overstayed their welcome. You know, by the 1980, they were getting really rotten. You know, like The Swarm.
Oh, yeah.
And When Time Ran Out.
Yeah.
You know, they just... And, but I was still loved, you know, all of them. And so when I became an IMDb user commenter, you know, like a reviewer, user reviewer.
I was one of those people, too.
I was so intent to keep the memory of my beloved movie going that I just randomly chose the name Poseidon. Poseidon 3 was what it was. And then, you know, with comments, they had that, the forums and stuff. And then there was comment and chat sites and everything. And
don't
I just
you
always
miss
used
IMDb?
That.
I miss that.
I do. I do to a degree, but it could get kind of nasty too.
Why were people such babies on that? I didn't get it.
I've been told, I don't go to a lot of places like that, but I've been told that classic movie fans can be some of the most vituperative ones out there. Like there's just certain people, you know, not to skip ahead, but I have a kind of a stalker person who's come to my blog over and over and over.
You're
and over
kidding,
and over
because of an overview
to no to just get to push a certain agenda, and that's why my comments are moderated now. I don't really care what anybody says, but this person, well, there was two. One was just pushing some kind of crazed agenda that I wasn't going to have, and the other one was hell-bent on correcting every single word I said, no matter what it was, on Clint Walker, who I adore. It's not like I was ever going to say anything bad about Clint Walker. You know, when he died, a part of me died recently. But this person would not let up. And so finally I had to just make all the comments moderated. I just click publish on 99.44% of them. But I just had to keep some of the dogs out.
Because
but
you don't need that. When did he die? He was one big hunk
just
of man.
Just recently, like just earlier this year.
He did a lot of 70s
ago.
Movies of the week.
But I just kind of got that handle, I guess I'll say, from different chat rooms and stuff. So then people would, you know, call me Poseidon all the time. It wasn't like trying to own that name or anything like that, because some people don't like that. You know, they feel like I don't really have the right to use the movie.
And, why are
you know,
people
like
so think, weird?
They're just very proprietary, and I get it. So I'm not
I
even mad
don't.
About it. I mean, we all like our stuff, and we like to hold dear. We don't like it messed with.
But
you know what I mean?
What?
So, but
you
I
know
kind what? Of had an identity going to a degree. And so when it came time to make a blog and see all my comments, if I'd leave on other blogs, they would always say Poseidon, you know. So finally, it just became my place. And since it's I didn't promote it. I don't make any money off of
you
it. There's
don't.
No ads. So it's kind of a secret. You know what I mean? So I called it Poseidon's Underworld because it's under the surface. It's just riding low.
And it's something you love to do.
Something I like to do. It's all about what I want to say, obviously, because why else would you do a blog?
And you're hilarious and right on.
Well, I try.
Oh, you are.
But,
I laughed.
It's grown,
laugh.
And we will be 10 years old this August.
Yay.
So,
come on for your anniversary. Can you come
hard
on
to
for
believe.
Your anniversary?
I've had people, you know, like Mark Goddard from Lost in Space contact me.
Cool.
Monica Lewis, who was a wonderful jazz singer way back in the day, and then she was married to Jennings Lang, the producer, so she ended up in all kinds of disaster movies. She contacted me, and then, of course, the greatest of all was Joan Collins.
Oh, my goodness. Did you hear she's going to be an American Horror Story?
Absolutely, yes. Very excited about that.
Isn't that fab?
And so that's been a thrill, because I'll walk through broken glass to meet even the most low-rung celebrity that there is. You know, I mean, I trudged through Walmart through thongs and throngs of people just to see the back of Billy Ray Cyrus's head, because he was there for a CD signing. And I didn't even want the CD, and I didn't even like his music, really, but I had to see the back of his big...
did he still have the mullet?
The bi-level, yeah, the mullet. And I did, you know, but I'm living in Cincinnati, Ohio. So who am I going to see? You know what I mean? So to be contacted, by these people that I've loved and watched and everything, it's amazing.
And Liz Smith gave you a great write up.
She was an amazing woman who worked right up until the end.
God, I wish I could
she
interview
had some
her.
Help. She and I corresponded some, and she was a dear person. I had read her autobiography too, and the only thing I feel so bad about was she always wanted me to write more of Elizabeth Taylor.
Why?
And I never did. Well, she just really liked Elizabeth Taylor very, very much, and I enjoy Elizabeth too. But my blog has always been geared more towards the unknown, you know, because I want to bring these people out that have been buried by time. Now, obviously, Joan Crawford hasn't been buried by you, and I do like to write about her, but many, many people I write about are so obscure unless you're a fan, you know?
Yeah.
And I like to bring them out of the mothballs and give them a good shake. Like these Michaels that I've been profiling lately, like Michael Dante and Michael Forrest, these actors from the 60s who people are like, who?
I don't, you know, who's like, Michael Dante and Michael Forrest? Give me a...
Well, Michael Dante, both of them were guest stars on Star Trek, which was a favorite show of mine as a kid. But Michael Dante was in that Samuel Fuller movie, The Naked Kiss, where the bald prostitute, you know, kills some man or something with her shoe.
Right. Oh, that is away. The best. Yeah. That is, was he
He's
the child
that.
Molester?
He was. Oh, he was the man that she married.
He was this multimillionaire, and he thought, because he knew she was a prostitute, she thought he really loved her. But
he thought they
was,
would be kindred spirits,
right,
because they were both perverted.
Yeah.
So,
and she ended up killing him. Go, girl. Go, Connie.
But he was in other movies, too, with Audie Murphy, Randolph Scott. He did Seven Thieves with Rod Steiger and Joan Collins. He had a good career, but then he gave it up to work in radio.
Hmm.
And then Michael Forrest was, he played an Indian in so many movies, like 100 Rifles with Raquel Welch. He was her cohort along for the ride, you know, in that. He did a lot of Roger Corman quickies in his career. Mm-hmm. Just a really tall, nice, good guy. He ended up on As the World Turns for a number of years, in a big popular storyline that was in Greece and everything. And I don't know. I just like to, like I said, I like to take these people that you'll see their face and you'll be like, oh yeah, that's him, you know, but cause just like you've seen Michael Dante, you just didn't realize it. You know what I mean?
And I knew
that's
exactly
kind of
who he
thing.
Was. And I know I do. I recognize a lot of your people. Cause I'm like you, we're sort of like, you know, we take it all in. We read the rag, you know, I grew up reading Rona Bear at Hollywood. I could read that before I hit first grade because my sister, who was older than me, you know, and I knew what was going on with Burt Reynolds and, you know, and she was fabulous. And Rona almost came on this show. So I'm going to try to get her once again. And Randy J. Tamborelli. I'd love to have him on. He's done a lot of books, and he's a hoot, and he's really a good friend with Rona.
I don't know who could know anything more than Rona Barrett. I mean, she just had her finger on the pulse.
She was the greatest.
I mean, she was so there.
And she wasn't mean. She wasn't mean.
She was teased a lot, though, too, you know, made fun of, parodied, and things like that. But she was really in it. And then she just, one day, there was just no more. She was on Entertainment Tonight or something as a consultant. And then all of a sudden, she was just gone. And it, you know, and she She wasn't a muckraker like you have, you know, TMZ and this kind of
things. Yeah, not at all. She was not. She was good. And I liked her a lot. And I'm still going to try to get Rona. But I have a guest coming on. She's not going to come on right away. But she was a tabloid reporter for years. She used to be a runner for Rona. And she's going to come on the show. And that'll be a lot of fun.
And who is that?
Oh, sheesh. I don't have her book, Annie. Oh, I can't think of her name. I can't. I just can't. Okay. You know, you were telling me that you were into the Partridge Family lately, and I am curious as to why.
Well, it's a ridiculous reason. I was at that Half Price book sale, and they also sell DVDs and CDs and stuff. And I got the first season of the Partridge Family for $2. And I thought, well, I can pay $2 for every episode of the first season. I wanted to see what the first kid looked like that they fired.
Was cute.
The little boy. Then there was a little boy that they didn't like.
Jeremy Gelbux. He was supposed to be a little S-H-I-T. A real
well,
little
I guess
Hellion.
He was like on and off the set. Yeah. So they got rid of him. But, you know, I saw David Cassidy in person one time. I'd say maybe 10 or 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the man, first of all, he looked amazing and he still sounded amazing. And I know he had a lot of problems and I know he had some health issues, but I was so grateful I got to see him, you know, when he could still do what he was doing.
Where did you see him?
Well, like I said, in Cincinnati, you have to crawl through broken glass if you want to see it. This was at a big, Liberty Township, this big mm-hmm. place, like they had a big free concert and a big festival, and he was the headliner. And I'm sure he was paid a pretty penny to come and do it, but it was free for us. And my friend Robert, a very good friend of mine, who plays Santa Claus at the Cincinnati Zoo, he is insane over the Brady Bunch and Partridge Family. And we were not going to miss this concert for any reason. In fact, my friend Robert is in an episode of the Brady Bunch because he was at Kings Island the day they filmed there.
Oh, in Cincinnati.
And so, you know, we always have to strain our eyes to look for the little chubby guy in the red t-shirt. You know, sort of. But anyway, he just was crazy about David and I was ambivalent, you know? So, but anyway, he made a believer out of me because he was wonderful in concert, very charismatic. And then watching the show back here recently, it's amazing that the first several episodes, someone else is singing. It's
I
not
know.
Him.
And then they discovered that he could sing.
And he was brilliant. And then later on, like 8 or 9 episodes in, it's not him again. And I'm like, what are you people doing? You've got this great singer who's perfect for that kind of music.
He was wonderful. And, you know, I loved him. I just think he was the cutest thing. And one of my BFF in New York that I've known forever, Blood Brothers with Sean and David.
Yeah.
They were on Broadway, and I believe Petula Clark played the mom. He got me a front row seat. And I got it right. And David was like I think he was a bad kid. And there was a bunch of old broads sitting in the front. David, I think they wanted to throw their underwear up at him. And of course, I wasn't an old broad yet. But he had to spit during the show. And he spit, and it literally landed at my feet. And I was like, this is kind of exciting.
You didn't scrape it into a little vial
I didn't. I wished I was wearing like peep-toed shoes and I might have scraped it onto my toe or something. I'll never wash my toe again kind of thing. But he was adorable. And the talent and the voice and Broadway. I mean, you got to have those pipes. He and Sean both had amazing pipes, and it was a great show. And I will never
forget. And you wouldn't have thought about
that.
Sean, you know, you wouldn't think Sean with pipes because what his teeny bopper songs mm-hmm. were so light. The do run, 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 and all that. There was no indication that he would be able to sustain a Broadway show every night, you know.
He did for quite a while, but I have to say, David had the chops. David had the songs. David had my heart. And later, you know, we used to go out, and this is when I was a young whippersnapper, And we'd go out. After we saw the show, we went to one place, and then we went to a place where a lot of people who were on Broadway hung out, and I knew a lot of friends there and whatever. And so in comes Sean and some other woman, not his wife. And he's wearing a Fruit of the Loom t-shirt with the half sleeves V. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Is that snobbish? But it was weird. Yes. Why is he wearing a Fruit of the Loom t-shirt, half sleeved with a V thing, but whatever. But who was really hot was the narrator of this. And he was in the movie Cruising as a killer. Do you remember that movie, Cruising?
I remember the movie. I wasn't the killer. Didn't he have I have
mama issues,
real dark
mama
curly issues. Hair.
Oh, he was a hunk, tall and handsome. He came in and he gave me eye contact. I was cute then. And then, but I was very drunk. So he's looking at me, giving me the eye, and I'm giving him the eye. And then I swoon and I fall into a chair like a drunken slug. That was the end of that love story.
I think I have the killer and one of his victims mixed up, because one of the victims was real dark with curly hair and he had pockmarked skin. But the killer wasn't like that. No. Wasn't he more tall and lean?
He was very tall and lean. Yeah. And yes, but that was a good movie. I actually like that movie.
What was really surprising for me with this Partridge Family excursion was on the set, there's great extras, which surprised me. And again, this was $2, that they had an episode of Partridge Family 2050 or something like that. And it was in space. And there was this, I don't remember this cartoon at all, but the Partridge Family lived in outer space. And somehow they had gotten Suzanne Crow, whatever her name was, the little girl. And I think Susan Day and a couple others to do their voices on this cartoon. And it's inspired me. I'm going to do a blog post before long here about television series we knew and loved that suddenly after Star Wars, in space.
Really? They kept putting,
pretty sure they put Gilligan's Island in space.
Oh,
and I know they did. They took Josie and the Pussycats and put them in space. And when I saw the Partridge Family in space, I'm like, this is redonkulous. And so I'm going to look.
No.
I'm going to look them up because I know there were more. I don't think they took the Dukes of Hazzard in space, but they did have a Dukes of Hazzard cartoon. They had all kinds of cartoons that have long been forgotten.
Which is amazing to me because these guys had every right to fight to get pieces of lunch boxes, everything. And they're like, oh, you greedy people. Look at Sherwood Schwartz. He did. Can you say that 5 times fast? Look at Sherwood Schwartz. He had the Brady Bunch. He also did Gilligan's Island. And he made Mega Mills.
Did he do I Dream of Jeannie or no?
Sheldon Leonard.
I always get them mixed up.
Yeah. So he... and I say to his heir now, his son, it's like, why don't you just give each of these guys $1 million? You won't even miss it. They worked their asses off. They did. Of course, it ain't going to happen. But, they worked really hard and they didn't get the dough. Yeah. And I have to tell you, as we were talking about David Cassidy, I was very disturbed when I heard that he died. I cried. And I also, his last words were to his daughter, who said, I wasted so much time. I wasted so much time. And I just read, I don't know if this is true, but allegedly David Cassidy, how he told everybody he had Alzheimer's and something else? He didn't.
Parkinson's.
An early onset Alzheimer's. And he admitted he lied because he was still getting drunk. Oh. That's it.
You remember that terrible, horrible thing where he was in concert at the peak of his career and the girls were crushing so hard that one of them died.
Yes.
I think that really affected him way back then a lot. I think it just made him sick. you know, that he was out there doing what he loved and someone's dead, you know.
No fault, you know, it wasn't his fault, you know, it wasn't his fault, but I can see where he might go, you know.
But, you know, he inherited a bad legacy of those kinds of demons from his father. His father was so messed up. God love
him. Poor Jack.
I'm an amazing presence on screen. He's always so watchable. If you ever see him on like Columbo.
Oh my
or
God.
Anything else.
Everything. You know, and did you know
that fascinating, but
did you know that they, I'm sorry for bumping into you.
No, that's all right.
Do you know that they wanted him? They chose him to be Ted Baxter on Mary Tyler Moore. But he turned it down.
Wow.
And then he only once played Ted Baxter's very vain brother who modeled socks and underwear and stuff. But he was fabulous. But
he would have been very good. Oh, I mean, God. Ted Knight, fairly unforgettable.
That's it,
now.
Ted, you yes. Know. But he would have been perfect, too, with that gleaming teeth and everything. And
the pinky ring.
Oh, yeah. All of them lost it. They all had that. And David allegedly lost it. It was Casty Crest. And speaking of bulges, I was reading Shirley Jones' last book that she did. And it was horrible. She was talking about how all the boys inherited her husband's bulge. really? Shirley, must you tell us that? And she also was,
well,
yeah.
Shirley got into some trouble. You know, I don't dislike Shirley. I grew up loving Shirley. I grew up on Oklahoma, The Music Man, all that, you know, Carousel. And then, of course, whatever else she did after that, mm-hmm. right on up to Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. So she's in the Disaster Movie Club, right? But she wrote in that book an outright lie that she and David and Jack Cassidy, you know, were met up with Joan Collins and someone, and they were going to have a foursome or some sexual thing like that was in that book. And Joan threw a fit and, you know, had her people threaten her. And I don't know what happened, if they excised it and printed further copies without it or what.
Yeah, I've
but
never seen that.
It was just completely made up. What? I mean, Joan, she's had her fun. She had her fun all through the whole time she was in Hollywood, but, you know, that was not true. And she stood up and said, look, you know,
was that her most recent book or the one she did years ago with Marty Engels?
I thought it was this most recent one because, you know, Shirley has this underbelly risque side that we don't always see. Maybe we saw it when she did that movie Grandma's Boys or whatever it was, where she was like, she and Shirley Knight and some other old lady were holed up with all these fraternity boys, but
these young bucks.
Yeah, but you know, Marty was one of the most tasteless people. Let's face it.
Well, they all hated him. They all hated him.
Yeah, they did. And she's definitely got a side we don't see in all her, you know, sweetness and light appearances on PBS.
She's a human being, and she, you know, she did wear in the '60s and '70s, like, you know, like falls and like outfits you wear, you know, those kind of frocks. And
she won an Oscar playing a prostitute, but then when you watch it, she's still sort of prim. You know what I mean?
I never really got that she was
down
like
and dirty.
Miss, yeah, really.
It's not like she was in Clute, you know.
I love that, watching her, looking at her watch. What a better scene than that. Oh, you know what I saw the other day? It was on TCM, and The Eyes of Laura Mars with Faye Dunaway.
Yep.
I like that movie, but you know who I fell in love with? I watched this movie with my best friend at the time, Pam Dupree, and we had to be about 11, and it was rated R, and they didn't want to let us in, but we got in. And I fell madly in love with Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
And he's a shit in real life, and especially now, because I know people who know him. And this, okay, I'm going to say allegedly a shit in real life. But I know someone who I trust implicitly who worked with him, and it was not pretty. And he also has a reputation of being a curmudgeon on screen and off. But on Laura Mars, man, was he.
When he was, you know, being an alleged shit, was he was it because he was sexually harassing, or was it like this whole Me Too thing, or was he just a jerk?
A jerk. Like, don't even look at me. I don't want to know your name. It just really, and this person never says bad. He's worked with so many famous people. He's worked with Peter O'Toole. He's worked with so many people I can't even name. And he said the worst person ever to make him feel like a piece of, you know, dirty toenail like underneath the scum of the earth was Tommy Lee Jones.
Did you know who the original star was meant to be? In Eyes of Laura Mars?
You mean rather than Faye Dunaway?
Uh-huh. Mm-mm. Well, it was produced by John Peters.
Whoa. And she sang the song. It was supposed to be Babs? What happened to
Barbara Streisand. Well, maybe she didn't want to wear some of the wacko clothes that Faye Dunaway had on. I don't know. But whatever reason, yeah, that would have been a really different role for Barbara.
Yeah, you know? But I actually like this movie, and I liked Faye in it a lot. And I am not a really big fan of Faye Dunaway. But I don't know. Hey, let's talk about what your a summer fun kind of flicks for people. And I love these. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows I love 70s TV movies. I'm hooked on them. And I found Jessica Raine. She said, I don't know that movie. And I'm sending her pictures of things. I don't remember that.
That her father was in?
No, that she was in. Jessica was an actress. Yeah. She was.
And that was her name, her professional name?
Yeah, Jessica Raine. Huh. And so I'm watching all these movies, and you have written about the devil. And I think it's fascinating because you guys, you know, there are so many wonderful classic movie actors and actresses who did these movies. And in that one, let's talk about The Devil's Reign, which I love. Devil's Daughter, right?
Devil's Daughter was one of a few films that Shelley Winters did. One of them was called Revenge, where her daughter was raped or something, so she took the man and like threw him in her basement.
I saw that one too.
And then Devil's Daughter was just the year after Poseidon Adventure. She really got to ham it up.
Her hair was tinted red.
And she played this fur-laden, cigarette-smoking, limo-driven, you know, rich
By
woman.
By whom was she limo-driven?
Jonathan Frid of Dark Shadows.
And he played Mr. something.
Barnabas Collins.
No, he played, like, he had a funny name, Mr. Somebody. And he couldn't.
Oh, shoot.
I have it written down if I can find
I know he
it.
Couldn't speak. Yeah, didn't he couldn't speak. He probably speak. Had his tongue cut out knowing yeah, the way the
Knowing that. Went. Evil Witch. Home for the Holidays. Howling the Witch. I have so many great flicks. Devil's Daughter. Yeah. And his
But
name,
you know, when I look at these
Mr.
movies.
He was Mr. Howard. He was Mr. Howard.
Okay. Well, you know, like I said before, I read and watch and all of that, but I'm still learning too. You know, every time I turn around, there's something else. And I did that write-up of Devil's Daughter, with which the star of it, really in truth, was Belinda J. Montgomery, who was in practically every 70s
movie. And her little brother.
She was all over the place. Well, then I didn't know that, though.
Yeah.
The next movie I did was a movie called Runaway, about a train careening out of control with no brakes. And Lee Montgomery was this child in that movie, and that's her little brother.
And Larry Hagman was his dad?
No, I don't know. No, where in the... No, it was Martin Milner.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Bad
But, you know, Lee Montgomery, I have to admit, he really spoiled quite a few things for me. He had a very high-pitched kind of whiny voice, and if his character was like that, you're kind of were in for some trouble.
Well, did you like Burnt Offerings, Karen Black, Oliver Reed, our darling
Betty Davis,
and then this high-pitched whining creep you didn't like?
I didn't care for him because, you know, he just was always, you know, dad, because Oliver Reed was trying to drown him, which I guess he did have a point. But he was also in a movie with my beloved Clint Walker called Baker's Hawk. And it was all about, it was like kind of a rustic family drama. Because, you know, Clint didn't like bad language or anything like that. So he did a lot of these kind of outdoorsy, sometimes dreary, you know, family movies like
He did some, and he also did
Night of the Grizzly. 70s,
Night of the Grizzly. It's not with Joanne Pflug.
No. It was Martha Heyer. Martha Heyer was in Night of the Grizzly, but he did do a movie with Joanne Pflug called, I think it was called Moon of the Wolf.
Yes, and exactly. And
Peter Graves was in it with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he did, you know, of course, that movie, with Jane North, who had been Dennis the Menace, Maya.
Clint Walker
played his dad. Clint Walker played his dad in Maya, and then they made a TV show called Maya, and Jay North was in that without Clint Walker. But, you know, Jay North came out later. I don't know if you saw this or not. If you haven't, you've got to look it up on YouTube.
I have not.
Came out later with this horrible account of how his aunt and uncle were his guardians during Dennis the Menace, and they beat him mercilessly and locked him in a room.
What horrible story.
You know, did all this kind of stuff to him, and he hated Dennis the Menace. He hated everything. Liked all the cast members, but they were powerless to do anything, and he had these horrible people. And the same thing happened to someone else. Was it Corey Feldman? I think his parents were just, if he didn't do something perfect, they'd beat him. I mean, people are crazy.
They are nuts, and they let their kids have to go into these things, and it drives me mad.
But I've got one for you, too.
What?
Jay North, when he turned into a young man, because he eventually walked away from acting pretty much entirely, but when he was in his like late teens or early 20s, he did a movie called The Teacher. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see that?
Uh-uh.
With Angel Tompkins. She's this buxom, blonde, gorgeous teacher who he's one of her students, and she seduces him. And so Dennis was really becoming a menace when he got into that one. But his hair was dark red, like an auburn color, and they bleach it and make it stick with that cowlick in the back. And I mean, the poor kid just had it rough.
It makes
sense. Were just nothing but property, just like Buffy. You know, they just were property. Go out, smile, do that.
You see it, and you see, I believe we're going to have, Poseidon is going to help me interview the lovely Kathy Garver. We have some lovely stories about her, but we'll tell them someday, but not now. And
she got through it unscathed.
She got it through it unscathed because she was older. And what I want to ask her is, what could she do? But the mother called Kathy Garver, the day before Anissa Jones committed suicide, and she said, "Please help me. Can you come here and help me and try to help me with Anissa? I don't know what I'm going to do. She's going to die, whatever." And Kathy Garver says, "Well, I have a show to do. And I'll call you when I come back." Pa-doom, boom, 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 boom. Yeah, thanks, sissy. Anyway.
But you can never know for certain.
You can't. Really, I'm not blaming. Moment. You can't blame her for that.
And Lord have mercy, she's sissy. What's her? Kathy's still busy these days. So, you know, you can't get her to come and save you if you want her to now.
No.
Because her schedule's so packed.
She is. So. She is such a crazy busy broad. It's unbelievable. But we will get her on.
But that had been a while. You know, I think they'd probably been estranged, you know, from working with each other for
several
years. Not really.
The girl was 16 at the end of Family Affair, and she was supposed to still carrying Mr. Beasley. Or Mrs. Beasley. I'm sorry.
You're that doll. Oh, my gosh.
You know,
scariest thing I've ever seen practically in my life was when they had this style head thing that you could buy that was Buffy.
Oh, Duffy, no.
And it was this really scary head that Buffy played with. And it was just had this most deranged facial expression and all this ratty blonde hair.
Poor little girl.
It wasn't supposed to look like her, but it just was her head that she was. It wasn't her head.
And to curl
it was her name on
stuff.
A head. Yeah.
Well, she was old. If you look at any of these shows with her, it breaks your heart because you know she's like 16, truly, and she's a shrimp But she's so depressed and whatever. And when she finally got out of there, she took her dough and ran and went wild. But I
those very, very early ones, the character Buffy was so despondent because her parents had just died.
Yes.
And it is wrenching.
Sad.
Oh, I know. She's so sad. And it's just gut-wrenching because they pull out all the stops, you know, the music, mm-hmm. Uncle Bill, the whole bit, you know.
Uncle Bill. Yeah. Whom I love. Another one of my crushes, Brian Keith.
Yeah.
I want to tell you, I did some research about 70s movies for us because I want to, you can get most of these on YouTube. So I put some out there with some really, really good old actors. But I know the most embarrassing thing, I felt embarrassed. And I know I came home from school and watched it and didn't even know who Dana Andrews was at the time. It was in the 70s and I'm watching Family Affair. And so I guess he used to work with Uncle Bill. And what was he, an architect or something? He was like Mr. Big Stuff, an engineer, Mr. Suave. Okay. So he comes to visit Uncle Bill. And the kids hear that there's some kind of something they're missing. And then Uncle Bill tells him that he was in jail because he stole some money from a company, but he made a mistake and he paid for it. So there's Dana Andrews. Next thing you know, Buffy and Jody, Dana Andrews catches them emptying their piggy banks and hiding it. That was the saddest thing. Man with two heads, you know, anything else works great. But poor Dana Andrews had these two little moppets, you know, taking their piggy bank money, and he catches them. That they're
my favorite Dana Andrews detail is the fact that in 1960 he starred in a movie called The Crowded Sky.
Mm.
He played a jet pilot.
Love
and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. was a Navy pilot.
Grrr.
And their planes collided and, hit. And then that was 1960. And then 15 years later, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. played a jet pilot and Dana Andrews played a little private plane.
Oh, wow.
Pilot. And they crashed into each other in Airport 1975.
Was that?
I just love that casting. I mean, it's just so neat to me, you know, that they did that. It's not a remake. It's a whole different set of circumstances. But the fact that, you know, Ephraim crashed into Dana and then 15 years later, Dana crashes into Ephraim and leaves Karen Black at the wheel. So. But.
Or wasn't that? Oh, yeah, yeah. And then what's his face? That's when Charlton Heston makes his big grand appearance.
Well, he had to because Roy Thinnes got sucked out the window. And
what about Eric Estrada? That's when everybody
was
swooning.
That's one of the most sexist.
Yeah.
He was the most sexist character, though. You know,
he was
very
Mr.
Cute.
Me Too. Mr.
Oh,
Me Too.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know how it can. I'm not PC that way where I get all, you know, pearls all clutched over everything, but I cannot imagine certain people today sitting down to watch Airport 1975 and listening to some of the things Eric Estrada says, and then the way Charlton Heston is, come on, baby, climb, honey, you know, and he's like, treats her like she's this little, you know, Dresden doll, and just, you know, so condescending, come on, honey, baby, just all the time. And this is a whole different period.
It
you know,
was.
People didn't really think that much of it.
It wasn't like anything. And it was very, very funny. Hey, you know what I was looking at? Because you had it on there. I was looking for some things like for Ephraim Zimbalist and stuff, but I didn't see his name there. So I was looking up Troy Donahue because of The Summer Place. And then he was in Susan Slade with Dorothy McGuire. And she gets knocked up, and Dorothy McGuire pretends the baby is hers.
Yeah, Connie Stevens.
Right. And I read that that was the last movie before she had her nose fixed.
Connie or Dorothy or who?
Connie. Dorothy was skinny at that time. Dorothy, after Summer Place, I don't think she ate anymore. It bothered me. But she was doing that, and the eye makeup on Bert Convy. Oh my.
Well, Susan Slade was John Waters' very favorite film. And so as soon as I read that, I'm like, I've got to see this movie. And it took forever. I thought I would never see it. It was one of those bucket list movies that you just wanted to see, Finally, it ran somewhere and on TV, you know, and I finally got to see it. And this Dorothy McGuire, she's just watching this baby and she's so abusive to this baby.
I know. And she leaves her cigarette. She's drinking. Constantly.
Yeah. Her teeth were as yellow as corn. And
Bad corn.
And then she's beating this baby. This real life baby is crying its head off and she's smacking his hand. And then the poor thing catches on fire.
I know.
Troy Donahue. I could see why John Waters liked it. And when I saw... It might have. I don't think it was polyester. He had another one where Divine got all upset because she didn't get the cha-cha heels that she wanted for Christmas, and she overturned the Christmas tree on her parents. And ran away. But I could kind of see, you know, where he was getting a lot of his stuff, his feel from that melodramatic. Because you know, in A Summer Place was when Constance Ford smacks Sandra Dee across the face and shoves her into the Christmas tree. And
the little Charlie Brown cheesy Christmas tree.
So it's
tree.
Pretty much, you know, all the same family of films. But I did love Susan Slade when I saw it. And her boyfriend that got her knocked up, because didn't Troy...
Yeah, they met on a... They met on a cruise. And there was
a stashing... But didn't she get knocked up by a different man?
Yes, she got knocked up by a spear.
Yeah, that was Grant Williams. Grant Williams,
he was
really
cute.
Cult figure, and a book was just written about him very recently. And I have to check. I'm supposed to be getting an acknowledgement in that book because I had written a big thing about Grant Williams. You know, I was telling you how I dig these people up because he was famous for just one movie, The Incredible Shrinking Man.
He was him. Oh my God.
And he did a lot more, but that was like his one kind of enduring thing. But I tried to dig a little deeper, you know, find out more about him. And this author contacted me and we talked, and I was able to set him up with one of Grant Williams' acting students from the 1980s. And so he was going to, you know, acknowledge my help in the book, but I haven't gotten the book yet. I just, there's so much, you know, I just had the half price book clearance sale. So I'm like up to my ears, but it's one of those books on Bear Media. If you've ever heard of that site, they have a lot of really self-published sort of unusual books in there. They all look really good.
What is it? Bear Media?
It's B-E-A-R, Bear Media.
They have
books on people you would not imagine. They're wonderful books. One of them was based on the television series Mr. Novak, and the author of that book, I worked with him a little bit too, and he sent me a copy of that. But that site has endless supply of very unusual books, and they're kind of books you and I would like.
I got to check it out. Did you ever see The Enchanted Cottage, speaking of Dorothy McGuire? What do you think of that flick?
Well, I know a lot of people love it, and I did not dislike it. I think it's... It's fine. But you know what? I kind of have an aversion to Robert Young as a young man. I don't mind him as Marcus Welby so much.
Or
and
an
other
older
stuff,
actor. I just
but
don't
I just
get
don't,
him. Yeah,
I don't care
star.
For him as a young movie star, male, you know, lead. And it was fine. My favorite Dorothy McGuire performance is in A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
My God. That movie makes me cry.
Heart-ripper.
Oh, my God. And who was the guy who played the dad? He was amazing. And he got an Academy Award for Best Supporting
Actor. Was it like James Dunn or something?
Yes.
Maybe?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And the little girl. And I love the brother. You'll do. Yes. What's her name? That little
girl. Peggy.
Peggy Ann Garner. She was out of this world. I just love that movie. I watch it. And who was magnificent in that flick was Joan Blondell.
I had a feeling you were going to say Joan Blondell. She's very good.
She was
the whole
great.
Cast was good. The whole thing was wonderful. There's a whole sort of little sect of movies that are known to be great tearjerkers that I had never seen. And that was one of them that I saw for the first time about maybe 10 years ago. Wow. And another one was I Remember Mama.
I have never watched that.
It was so good. And there's just a lot of those. And they're kind of black and white or a little bit not on the radar these days, you know. And you find the, another one I just loved so much was called, is it Tomorrow Never Comes or something? It's Orson Welles and Claudette Colbert. And
oh, yes, yeah. Natalie Wood. Oh, and Natalie Wood's in it. And
Tomorrow
Richard
is Forever.
Long. Yeah.
It's Richard called Tomorrow Long. Is Forever. And I love that movie.
Walter Pidgeon marries her, right? Walter Pidgeon? After he leaves her?
I think so.
I love so. It's a great movie. Really, I love
And they're
that
not that long. Yeah, it's not long. But they're just those old, you know, tried and true, three hanky movies, and they're just wonderful if you're in the right frame of mind and yeah. you just want to, you know, let loose and no one's looking and no one can see that you're a big fat bloated blowfish from crying your eyes out over somebody and everyone in the whole movie's dead, you know? But it's a good little
who cares if they're
emotional
dead.
Release
and it is and it was a great movie. And I'm thinking of another one that I loved that I hadn't seen and it made me cry. What was it? There's so many that make me cry.
I cried everything, Grace. I cried during the new Wonder Woman that just came out last year.
Did you really?
Yeah, I cried two or three times. I'm
Girl
just
power?
A big sap.
I'm a sap, huh? too. I'm a sap.
And like I would cry. Well, my mother used to always have on, you know, the weekend, she'd have the old movies playing mm-hmm. on the UHF channel. And she'd sit there and cry over Magnificent Obsession and Madam X and all this
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I love those
Peyton
movies.
Place. And
oh.
and I just grew up with those. And so I'm all tuned in, ready to you just, if it's any good at all, I'll be a puddle. Yeah. And anything with Greer Garson, like the one where she's got the
Random
orphans.
Harvest. Oh, that one.
No, the one. What's the one where Blossoms in the Dust?
Yeah, Blossoms. And Walter Pigeon's there, too. And she has the orphans, and she wants to
oh, my
that
gosh.
One orphan. Oh, my God.
So sad.
Yes.
And but good sad. You know, like it's good. It's cleansing. It's not. It's good for you.
Of course it cry. Is, you know, because it means you still have feelings. Hi, my kitty cat's like riding around.
That's what I remind myself. I'm still, you know,
human.
I have some feelings
we
underneath
still
the crust.
Are empathetic and still have all that good stuff going on. We're going on to over an hour. But I want to talk to you more. And I love talking to you because you know all this great stuff. I want to ask you now for your thing, for your blog, which is wonderful. And how I found you first was looking up the movie that I had just read about with Merle Oberon, who starred in it with and wrote it with her husband, who was Robert Waldron. What was his name? Walden?
Walders, Robert Walders.
The one who
were
was
they
with,
married?
They married. And
yeah, they
he,
did marry.
Then he
was
went,
it Interval or was it there's Interval and then there was another one she did.
The one where she's like this love vixen and everybody she like is like everybody's in love with her, even her brother. And I
of love and desire.
Yes. And it was him. And Robert Walders ended up being he did not marry Audrey Hepburn. He was her
caregiver, sort of
her life mate too. I mean, and he likes the older women. And also after he was with Audrey, he went with Fonda.
Jessica Tandy.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him, but I think Jessica would have kicked him to the curb. Who was the other one? Henry Fonda's ex.
Shirley Fonda.
Right, his widow. So he liked those old rich broads. But that movie I was looking for, and I was brought, that's how I found you, search engine, I was brought to your website.
Yeah, Kurt Jurgens, however you say it, you know, was her brother, Merle Oberon's brother, and he loved her, was obsessed with her, everybody was. And Steve Cochran was in it.
Oh, he was hot.
Sammy Davis Jr. sings the song over the credits. That's another thing I just love is any movie that has this big, syrupy, romantic song by Vic Damone or Jack Jones or somebody like that, you know, just giving it their all, you know, Johnny Mathis.
Oh, what anybody, about? Yes.
Those movies. I love them.
Did you ever see, this is a hoot and a half with Joan, Autumn Leaves.
Oh, yeah.
With Bert, what's his, I mean, she falls in love with this guy, Bert, and then she ends up paying for everything.
Cliff Robertson.
She wanted Marlon Brando, but he said no. So she got Cliff. And I loved it because there was Lorne Greene and his father, and there was the ubiquitous, is that the word we say, in 70s movies, Vera Miles.
Yeah, she played, was in every 70s TV movie.
Oh, my God.
That's my favorite scene almost in the cinema. It's probably like a top 10 at least.
When they go out.
Lets them have it in the street. You know, calls Vera Miles a slut.
You slut.
And just gives them both 20 kinds of hell.
You tramp, and your souls are too dirty for hell itself.
Exactly.
And then Bert beats the crap out of her.
I didn't like it when Cliff threw a typewriter at her and everything.
No, that was right after. And
But oh my gosh, that scene. It's on YouTube. If you're listening and look up Autumn Leaves with Lorne Greene and Vera Miles, it's like a 2-minute scene. It's the most wonderful thing.
I have it also on my Facebook page for True Stories of Tinseltown because it's a hoot. You slut. I love it. I love it.
Joan. Whenever she does, she has that. And then in The Best of Everything, she has that telephone monologue where she just lets her unseen married lover have it. And she gets so upset at the end and she says, now you and your rabbit faced wife can both go to hell. And she slams the phone down and she starts to slam the phone down before she's even done with her line because she's so upset. And then in Berserk, she laid into Diana Doors real bad, called her a slut or a tramp one.
Trapeze.
No, Berserk.
Oh, Berserk was the one. Oh, yes. But the daughter was the real murderer.
Yes.
And she had that young buck, Ty Harding. Can you believe I know these names? You and I know all these obscure names.
Ty Harden wrote to me also.
Did he really?
But he went way off the rails towards the end. And he was a really controversial, like, rifle compound conservative person.
Like the Bundys or something like that?
He was just really crazed, and he wrote me the most insane letter about patriotism and guns and stuff. And I had to just, I couldn't put it on there. Yeah. I felt so bad because I had, you know, sung his praises because as a young man, he was so beautiful and a good actor, better than he has ever given credit for.
Yes. And
when he read my post, he put this just nutty, crazy comment that just went on and on. It was really unintelligible. I felt kind of, so I took it down.
Poor fella. Okay. Should we give a couple of summer movie? Are you there?
I'm here.
Summer movie. You should watch them. What do you call that? We give some suggestions, recommendations. Yes.
Wow.
Why don't you give a couple, and I'll give a couple.
I don't know if I have any ready.
Well, I do. These are the 70s ones.
Okay.
Did you see Live Again, Die Again one, the one I sent you yet? Have you seen that
one? I have not been able to watch the whole thing, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's a goodie. You ever see Death at Love House?
Oh, yeah.
Lorna Love. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so I guess I'm going to go on this one. I Love Home for the Holidays. This is a 70s TV movie of the week. It stars Alexis Smith, Walter Brennan, Sally Field, Jessica Walter, who plays a drunken, insane, hysterical chick like the one she played with Clint Eastwood, and Julie Harris. And
not Alexis Smith, though. It's Eleanor Parker.
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm thinking of the one with the little girl who lived down the lane, Eleanor Parker. And she was great. And this is a really fun movie. And you can find it on YouTube in full. Another one I love is Crowhaven Farm. I don't know why I love this film, but it's really good. It's like a, did you ever see that one?
Yes, I did, with Hope Lang.
Hope Lang and Paul Burke. And
he was in all of those 60s ones and
Yeah, 70s. I like that. Also, Satan's Triangle with Kim Novak. That's a hysterical movie.
Yep, seen that.
Uh-huh. And a lot of Babs. You know, you did The Letter, right?
I'm working on a post about The Letters right now.
Did you know there's another one that's called...
Yes.
Letters
from Three Lovers.
Yes. So I couldn't even believe that one.
They were trying so hard to make a series out of that, Aaron Spelling, and it just didn't sell. And it seems like a no-brainer because every week you'd have two stories with these letters that come, you know, a year late. And it seemed like a good concept for a show, but they couldn't get it.
Oh, I know.
What about Death Ship or something like that? Death Cruise, where the six people get invited on a cruise. That's a good summer movie.
That is a really good one.
Richard Long, Kate Jackson, Edward Albert. It was good.
Oh, I loved Edward Albert. And he was going out with Kate Jackson at the time.
Yes,
and
there were a couple in real life.
Killer Bees or something. And Gloria Swanson was in that.
Yeah.
And Kate Jackson and her... groovy looking handsome devil who's deceased. Can you believe he's dead? Edward. He was in Butterflies Are Free. What a pair of lips on him.
He was gone too soon.
Very soon. I really liked him a lot.
His father lived forever. His father was closing in on 100, I feel like.
I remember his mother, Margot. She was in Cat People.
Lost Horizon.
Lost Horizon and other movies. And she talked like this and she sort of rolled her stuff. And he looked much more like his mother. But prior to her dying, she had like a 200-pound tumor in her tummy that they had to take out.
Wow.
Yeah, she must have been go. Ouch. That must have been awful. Killer Bees. Another movie I want to recommend to you guys, because I've fallen in love with Efren Zemblis Jr. in this, is Home Before Dark. And it's a really great flick. I'd love you to watch it, and I'd love to hear your take on it. I'm going to give you my Amazon password so you can watch it, because I own it. It's so good. And it's called Home Before Dark, and it stars Gene Simmons, this real horrible man. I can't think of his name. He was in Imitation of Life with Lana. Gene Simmons.
Robert Alda?
No, that was the one with, he was in Imitation of Life.
Yeah, not John Gavin.
Not John Gavin, no. It was, this real nerd. I can't think of his name.
Oh.
And the lady who played Darren Stevens' mother.
Oh.
And Rhonda Fleming as a blonde. And
Mabel Albertson.
Yes, I love her. And
she was the mother-in-law of a famous actress.
Whom?
I don't know.
We'll have to look that up.
I just recently read a biography, and the person's mother-in-law was Mabel Albertson.
Wow.
I have to think a minute who it was.
And she was Jack Albertson's sister.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she looked the same. This movie's from the 50s. And then she went into the 70s doing like Darren Stevens' mom. She never changed.
I thought
changed.
She was brilliant as Darren Stevens' mother.
Oh, she was fabulous.
She would always have one of her sick headaches.
Yeah.
Just the way she said it.
She was wonderful. She was
amazing.
A wonderful character actor, actress. And in this, they also have her girlfriend, Hazel Evans, who's played by, what's the one? Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? You know, his mom, you and my father. What's his name? Victor Bruno's mother.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about, but I don't remember her name.
Yeah, I don't either. But she was in this, and it was funny. And she was just a good movie. Just a good movie I would recommend. And Let me see. We've gone an hour and 18 minutes. And
Well, that's enough to bore anybody to tears.
No, I think this was a fun show. And I wasn't bored to tears, to be honest with you. You have anything juicy you want to tell us? Anything new coming up? Anything?
I don't think I can come up with anything. The only thing, I'll tell you this funny tidbit. It's by the time, you know, your podcast is ready to go, this will be published, I would think, because I'm going to try to get this post off tomorrow.
Okie doke.
But when I was watching the letters and working on the letters, which I'm hoping to talk about or have that ready tomorrow, mm-hmm. I was looking at Dina Merrill, who's in the movie. She plays Barbara Stanwyck's younger sister. And she is in this outfit. And the outfit was just wearing me down because I was like, I've seen this somewhere. Well, the blouse is different, but the burgundy maroon velvet getup that she's wearing over the blouse was the same exact outfit that was given 2 years earlier to Kim Hunter to wear in Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
What an eye.
I really feel like I stumbled on something here. So I'm going to have visual evidence of that at the end of the post. But I was screaming, you know, that Dina Merrill, who was the heiress to the post serial fortune,
she was cousin,
did not
to
know
Barbara
that she was wearing
Hutton.
An ape outfit on that movie. There's no way that she knew. Oh, by the way, this was on a chimpanzee.
I love it. I hope they deep cleaned it. It would have a funky smell.
I know, because Dina's blonde and they kept finding all these ape hairs.
That's hysterical. I can't wait to read it.
I should bring up the Planet of the Apes after the whole Roseanne thing. But anyway, that I can't imagine that Dina had any idea whatsoever that her gorgeous velvet burgundy.
I have to look at this frock. I have to look at this frock.
Well, I'll have pictures of it. It'll be tomorrow or no later than Thursday. I do my blog at work, and it depends on how much actual work I have to do. So.
Okay, so this will be posted soon. It was so great talking to you. I miss
it. It was fun. I hope everybody, you know, could stay awake for most of it.
Oh, come on. It's fun. It was a fun show. And, you know, we kind of went here, there, and everywhere. And it was fun. That's what it's about. And it's not like we were drudging on one boring subject, you know. So I think it was great. And like I said, I'd love you to come on whenever you want to, because there's so much to talk about. All the scoops we can come up with.
Always is.
Never ends. So, and if we can get in touch with that incredibly busy Kathy Garver, we will talk to her, because we were supposed to, but she was.
Whatever happened to Tina Cole?
I'm a little worried about her. Her book did not come out, and so I'm kind of waiting a little bit, and then I'm going to ask her again. But we're going to talk to her, because I know how you love, and I read that you had never seen, you never saw an episode of My Three Sons?
No, I was afraid of the shoes at the beginning.
So, so how did you find Robbie Douglas?
Well, I don't really remember. I just guess years later, I've never really seen the show. I saw one episode recently because Michael Forrest, an actor I was profiling, he was on that show as a guest. So I watched part of it, and it was when Tina was on there with the triplets, but Robbie wasn't on it. Oh. I don't know if I've ever really seen Robbie on the show. I've just seen pictures of him, and that was good enough for me.
He is such a cutie pie. He was.
And he died way too soon, too.
I know. And they... I love that they dated in real life. They were the cutest little couple. So, you know, I am going to try to reach out to Tina. I know she had a book coming out, but it hasn't been released yet. So I am going to check her out again because I just love her. And she gave me the greatest reply and saying that she'd come on. And I told her about you, how you loved Robbie, and I wanted to be her until she had the three kids. And
well, I
so
loved
cute.
Her whole family. I've spent hours watching the King family. I watched more hours watching the King family in the last 2 years than I should ever admit.
Oh, my God. Where do you see them on?
Oh, they have a they have a bunch of YouTube videos, but then I went and bought the DVDs of all their specials.
Oh my
Christmas,
God. All right.
Thanksgiving, so Easter, Mother's Day, the whole nine yards. And the joke was that the Kings had a special for everything except Groundhog Day. They had one, you know, celebrating September. I mean, it just went on and on. They had dozens of those. One
were they ever
special.
On a Lawrence Welk? No.
No.
Well, that was the
Hollywood Palace.
Lennon sisters? The Lennon sisters?
The Lennon sisters, yes. Yeah. So.
There is so much to talk about, but I am going to talk to Tina, and I am going to tell her that you have been watching her steadily on YouTube, and we will hopefully get to talk to her because she's great and she's a sweetie and I got a great reply from her. So, and I didn't get this podcast on the ground until, you know, like February. So, you know, it'll happen.
Well, it was a great pleasure. So I very much appreciate you having me.
I'm so thrilled you came on because you are the best. You are my fave. I rave about you on my pages and I will link you up. And I advise any of you to go to Poseidon's Underworld. I'll give you the link and you will just sit there and laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh and not want to get off.
And cry
from laughing so much. It's so funny. I love it. So everybody, thanks so much. And we'll be doing another show next week. And thanks a million. Keep listening. And thank you, Poseidon. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
There's got to be a morning after. If we can hold on through the night, we have a chance to find the sunshine. Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the store. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find a place that's safe and warm? It's not too late, we should be giving. Only with love can we climb. It's not too late, not while we're living. Let's put our hands out in time. There's got to be a morning after. We're moving closer to the shore. I know we'll be there by tomorrow. And we'll escape the darkness. We won't be searching. Searching.